president of Loyalist College, Mark Kirkpatrick, speaking to Quinney News. First of all, for all your staff and for you and your board members that had to put up with my texts and calls, I say thank you. And the caveat that I think, like everybody, like you guys included, this college means an awful lot to an awful lot of people. And so I appreciate you taking the time to do this and telling people right from the horse's mouth all the stuff that you guys have been up to, in particular with a lot of stuff that has been out of control, in the sense that these bombs were kind of dropped on colleges, universities. So I want to go back a little bit to what I think was sometime during 2023, and you get word of the international adjustment to immigration and students. And at one point, you guys were roughly around 7,000 students and a few thousand international students. I know hindsight is 2020, but did you think it was going to be something? Did you guys have any heads up that something such a massive change to what you guys were doing and are doing was going to change so abruptly?
I would say we had a sense that there was going to be some changes to the international. IRCC was going to make some changes. What caught, I think, ourselves and every college across the province and probably across the Canada, colleges and universities, by surprise, was the lack of interest of international students after the announcement. There was an awful lot of discussion that happened at the federal level that went above and beyond any of the caps that they had put in place.
Right.
And those discussions devastated the international market. You know, we were given certain caps. Those caps are what we did our initial planning around. We had every expectation that we would be able to meet those caps and what those results will be. And as time continued, we started to just realize that this isn't just about a cap. This is about the entire collapse of the international student market across Canada.
Right.
And that's a very different discussion than having a cap.
One of the, correct my wording and make sure I get this correct, one of the things that I had heard from an individual I was talking to within government was the shift of the interest of, if you're an international student, the perception of you're not welcome. Not that they weren't, but that might have been a perception where Canada was, we want you with students here. Did they start to look elsewhere? Were other countries now the new spot for a lot of these international students looking to go abroad?
That's exactly true. And see, that's the part I was talking about the collapse. If we had to keep our reputation in place when we announced the changes to the IRCC mandate and the caps, that's a very different financial or impact discussion than when people go out and publicly talk negatively about the post-secondary education system in Canada. Which then turns what was, I believe, we were a top three destination in the world for an international student to, we got to be close to the bottom now.
Right.
And so that's when I talk about the collapse of the market, that was the part that we didn't learn till much later, that it really was a collapse. That's the part that really hurt.
Tell me about the consultation process, or perhaps a lack thereof, ahead of time. Did you guys, were you consulted? Did anyone give you a call and say, Mark, what do you think if this happens? And if it does, how should we do it?
No. And I wouldn't have expected a federal agency to call a specific college in Belleville. You know, we have a federal organization called CICAN that represents all colleges across the country.
Right.
And they have done their best to get in and make sure that the federal government understands the impacts. But I think the consultation was limited.
You're in a position that is probably one that nobody would want as far as timing. You've been part of this college for an awful long time, and you've been in different roles. But when you have to start picking up the pieces and coming up with a plan to move forward, tell us about that process, the people are involved, and how that works, because I'm assuming that's not a 20-minute meeting with your board of governors and your senior staff.
No, it takes weeks, if not months. I mean, there's steps. So first it is really understanding the size and scope of the financial hit. Like I said, as we got the word about the caps, it was it just got continually worse until we realized the collapse was happening. And that didn't happen over a couple of days. That happened over weeks and a couple of months, right. Or actually several months, before not just us, but the entire sector actually realized, no, this isn't just about caps. This is a collapse. So once we understand the size and scope of the problem, then we actually have to come up with a vision of who we want to be and when. So what is this college going to look like in a few years? It can't be what we were.
Right.
We just don't have the financial resources to do what we used to do. And so once we figure out and make reasonable assumptions, we start a long process of how do we get from revenue X that now is revenue Y, and now I've got to get my expenses to match it.
Right.
And it's been very challenging because the reality is that every college in the sector is a lot of our expenses are associated with people. Right. And so that's what makes things tough.
I was reading, as you know, we do year in reviews and look aheads every year. And we've done those interviews for a number of years with you. And I was just reflecting on the 2023. And one of the lines that you had said is, with people comes a good financial position. And I don't think that certainly has changed. But to go from 7,000 people to 2,300 to 2,500, you had said in your address to staff, smaller and more sustainable, but kind of the right fit for moving forward. Through all of this, how many years do you think it's going to take till the waters kind of settle again, or is it never going to be the same?
We're assuming that the waters aren't going to settle for a while.
Okay.
Because I think that's the prudent thing to do. So when we built our plan, we built it very conservatively. There's no speculation in there. We don't assume the government's going to come in and change the funding formula to a ridiculous amount of money. We know that they're looking at it, but I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know what it means to loyalists. So we can't assume those things are going to happen. But what we can do is change the things that we can control and the things that we can manage. And so that's what we focused our plan on in developing it. And we're looking to get to a reasonably sustainable or balanced budget by fiscal 28, which that's 27-28.
So we're currently in fiscal 26, which is April of 25 to March of 26, correct?
Correct.
So there's different numbers, and sometimes people might mistake one number for another.
Yeah.
$48 million difference in cash versus a $14 million deficit versus $31 million, which I believe was a funding allocation. Then we talk about your cash, liquid cash. There's a lot of numbers that if somebody is kind of sitting in trying to get this in a 45-second news story, it doesn't do it justice. No. So that's why I appreciate you doing this. So as far as the financial position and working with the Ministry of Colleges and Universities, tell us about the next couple of years and how that looks.
So we've done multi-year planning. And so this year, next year, and the third year are the most critical for us. And what's public and out there is that we've projected about a $14 million deficit for this year.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is a result of we believe and been pretty close that there's between this fiscal and next fiscal a loss of revenue in the neighborhood of $48 million.
Wow.
And so we've got to make up that difference to get back to balance. And so next year, we're going to make changes. We've listed out a whole bunch of things that we're going to try to do. Next year, we expect that deficit to continue to be about $10 million. Part of the challenge is, and we've talked about the concept of a cliff, but $48 million is leaving like now.
Right.
I can't get expenses out that fast. So there's a period of time where I'm going to be spending a lot more cash than I have cash coming into the table. So that's why we had to deal with the cash issue. The second part of it is related to the deficits and surpluses. That, you got to remember, there are things that go into there that are not cash related. Depreciation is the best example I can give. So they are two different things. They sort of work together, but they are very independent. But the goal is by fiscal 28, we will be within $1 million of balance. So after significant discussions with our board, we believe that should get us close enough. I mean, that's still quite a ways away in a very rocky world we're living. So we've got the ability to constantly monitor, see how we're doing against our measures that we've set throughout the year, not just every year we're looking at every single metric that we can to say, are we hitting the goals we need to hit? And I mean, the good news is so far through this fiscal, we've either hit or we've at least met every single goal that we've put in place from a financial perspective. So that's a good sign. Right. But just to give you a larger context, this is not a loyalist problem. This is every college in Ontario is facing this problem. And if you want some scary numbers, right now, I think the college sector is projecting somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 billion in revenue loss. And by fiscal 28, the structural deficit or the amount of funding that will be needed to prevent that is $1.5 billion.
Right.
So it is a very large problem across the entire college sector. And more strain is put on small, more northern and rural institutions because our cost of delivery is higher.
One of the things that for most people in the community, they see Mark Kirkpatrick, the president of a college. I want to put the person forward because it was probably the word that stood out the most in your presentation, and it was the word gut-wrenching. And so many times we lose perspective on the person as a whole versus the person that's doing, I wouldn't say 9 to 5, maybe 9 to 8:38 or whatever, the 22, 23-hour days you've probably had to deal with. Talk about the decisions that you saw laid out in front of you and then having to execute those decisions.
Let me put it to you this way. I've said since I've worked here that the most amazing people are the people that are in this institution. And they've done nothing wrong. I've said this several times. They are great people. They did nothing that puts them through this. Whether it's the people we've had to say goodbye to or the people that have had to continue to work here. I have nothing but respect and great gratitude to all of them. But we all have to make decisions to ensure this institution is here next year, the year after, the decade after that. And I know a lot of them. It's hard. Mm-hmm. But the people that are here are amazing people.
I want to make sure that is one of the we try and tell stories in 15-second clips, but I want to make sure that's one of them, because I think people can hear the sincerity in your voice. And it doesn't take away from difficult decisions or the effect of decisions, whether things are in your control or not in your control, depending on what it is. Let's talk about the province, because I think one of the things that, I think different levels of government are doing a lot of finger pointing. I think Queen's Park likes to point at the House of Commons, and House of Commons is just going to point that finger back. The tuition freeze. I want to make sure we get this right, because I was trying to go back to the prices, and I was trying to remember when I went here in 03, 04, the price versus what it is now versus the price of a pound of bacon or a loaf of bread and how much it's increased. It hasn't increased a whole hell of a lot in a long time. So tell us about when was the last increase we saw in domestic tuition at Loyalist College.
So domestic tuition has not increased. Let me put it this way. About 10 years ago, the provincial government put a freeze in place for tuition, both universities and colleges. But before they did that, they actually cut tuition. So essentially what you were paying in tuition in 2015 is what you pay today.
And I don't know if life has doubled in cost, but the idea of when you include the pandemic, inflation, debt, everything else, it certainly hasn't kept up. So when we're looking at going to 85% domestic students, and one of the things you had said in your discussion is let's presume they're not going to change their mind. They're going to keep a freeze in. How do you diversify to get, you know, you're not going to get the whole thing covered, but how do you diversify to get enough money so that the lights in this office are going to stay on 7-8 years from now?
First, let me say that any diversification will help, but is never going to solve the problem. It's there are things that we should do anyway, and we're just going to amplify them. but the size and scope of them will help, but they're not going to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is everything from really looking at our professional development work that we do to applied research to, you know, how do we leverage financially some of the things that we do here at the institution. We've had a very successful launch of our Summer Arts Experience program recently that we look to expand. These are all things that will contribute to the bottom line. They're all still part of our core business, and we will continue to do those things. We're going to continue to work. We're also looking internationally to see what we can do differently to actually generate some additional revenue as well.
Sometimes when you're locked into a bigger view than you, and if people aren't viewing Canada well on the international stage, do you have to push yourself away and say, don't listen to Big Brother, we want you here? Do you guys have to, as a group of colleges or as a single college, go to these markets to say, that doesn't represent how we feel in these international markets?
From an international student recruitment market, we are Canada. Okay. It doesn't matter, even if Ontario went, it doesn't matter. It's we are Canada.
Right.
Until the Canadian brand is fixed, this isn't going to change.
Right.
What we can do is, over the years, we have met and made strong personal relationships with different organizations and different people. Those are the relationships that we're going to look at to leverage to see if we can come up with unique solutions that are loyalist-based that will help our bottom line. Mm-hmm. Because one-on-one, we know each other. But as a country, right, or as a globe, it is Canada's brand.
So I want to dive into a per-student basis, because I think that's probably the best way for people to understand. If it costs you $10 per student to run your program, mm-hmm, and you're getting $8, it's certainly not enough. What is the amount that tuition would need to go up so that the college wouldn't have to take a loan? They wouldn't have to diversify. They wouldn't have to close. Is there a number? Because I know the number here isn't George Brown and it isn't Sault Ste. Marie, but what's that number here? How much would you need to increase it by where it would be self-sustaining?
The challenge is that our funding model is extremely complex. Okay. And so just changing tuition at a reasonable rate that any product that anybody would like to purchase, look at it that way, mm-hmm, we have to make sure that it still fits within the market. So it really is about all the complexity of how we are funded. Like we were supported by, I think it's close to 60 different grants that come in that we have to write annual reports on. Like literally every year we have to write annual reports on up to 60 grants that we get.
Right.
That help support this. And that's just the Ministry of College and University. We're also, right, partially funded through the Ministry of Labor, Immigration, Trades, and Skills Development, right?
Right.
There is a multitude of administrative overhead to an institution like this.
Sure.
Because we are still a public institution. So lots of reports, lots of reviews are done on us. I think you'd have to look at it at a much larger scale. But just to come back, and I'll give you some interesting the colleges has done some work. And so I think it was in 2022-23, the college sector, weighted average, we were losing about $2,200 per student, domestic student. It is worse, that's on an average, okay?
Right.
If we continue that trend through fiscal year 28, the college sector is anticipating that will be closer to $5,000 per student we will be losing.
What's your tuition right now for a domestic student?
It's roughly just over $2,700 a year.
So you need it to be $5,000.
Well,
ballpark to cover.
Well, even probably a little more than that.
Right,
but yeah.
Okay.
And so that's the challenge.
Right.
And the other thing is costs continue to go up. So then every expense goes up because...
With inflation. Cost,
it's, yeah, like, think of any business. If you were never allowed to change the cost, the value of your product,
right,
but your costs continue to go up, how do you stay in business?
I can't. It's so interesting you're bringing this up. So I was off with my wife yesterday, and so I, for the first time in 3 years, did groceries. And I thought milk was $4.99 for three bags. And I just thought she was buying the most expensive of everything. And joking aside, that is a reality. Mm-hmm. People are paying prime dollar. I want to hit home, and this is not being pro or anti community college, but the reality is if somebody in Madoc or Cressy or Brighton is going to do a course here, and all of a sudden Loyalist is gone, the cost to do that in Toronto probably quadruples once you include food and transportation and housing. What kind of economic, I think you told me a number a few years ago, but I just want to bring it back, the economic driver that a community college is. Can you give like the importance of what that is as far as the financial side of a community?
So I'm trying to remember the number because it was a couple of years ago that I looked at it, but it roughly we were about $400 million, I believe, is the economic value that we generated at that time when we did that last study for the region. But I want to go back to your point about the student in Madoc or the student in Belleville. So we are a four-county college. Loyalist College is very unique in a college system. There is no university in the four counties that we support. So that's Prince Edward County, Hastings County, Lennox and Addington, and Northumberland. We are it. That's what we support. Mm-hmm. The only other post-secondary institution in that area that I talk about is FNTI.
Right.
And so we are very, very critical to this region. So it's a discussion I have with a lot of folks, you know, municipal folks and provincial and federal folks, is if this institution isn't here, and that student you talked about at Madoc, isn't just that their cost is going to go up four times. They may not go to school. Mm. Because we live in a region with a very low socioeconomic environment. There are many people who could not afford to go to school and get a post-secondary education and then be able to get into our workforce and contribute to the economy if we were not here. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think that people have to understand. It's not just that it would cost four times. You're actually now saying someone can't get an education that they deserve and need. And that's the part that actually is one of the things that really scares me. And one of the things we really focus in on is we need to make sure that we create the workforce that this region needs for this region to be successful.
There's so many pieces to it. 65 to 70 programs at the height. Where were we at the? Do you have a ballpark or a guesstimate of how many we had at the highest in the last 4 or 5 years?
We would have been about 88 programs.
Okay. There was an announcement, and make sure I get the timing right. You guys announced 20% staff reduction, 30% programs, or do I have those numbers reversed?
That's roughly right, yeah.
Okay.
That was back in January last year.
Yes. So January of 25, almost a year ago?
Yeah.
Okay. So from that position, one of the things is there's the how those kind of fall off, and I think one of the confusing parts is that you guys had, this wasn't confusing. You guys had said all along at the end of that program's run so that people could still graduate. So we're going to see programs fall off even still from that previous announcement, and probably the same with staff because they're running out that program educating these kids. So from those original estimates of 20 and 30, is there going to be a further adjustment to that ongoing staff reductions, ongoing program suspensions, or is it a crystal ball scenario and you guys don't know?
Oh, so I can say this, is that we have no, we're not planning for any permanent program suspensions for the fall of 2026.
Okay.
So, normal enrollment or pay management practices will tell us that we may do a temporary suspension on something, which just means we take it down for a semester because maybe there's just not enough students this year that are interested, and then we just bring it back the next one. Those things have always happened at the institution. They will always continue to happen. But from a permanent suspension perspective, there's nothing planned for the fall of 2026. We have a multi-year plan to get our expenses down, as well as try to drive a revenue. I think I was clear in the town hall that we had the other day, or the update, that we will have to continue to work on our workforce and the workforce levels to get them down to where our expenses are properly aligned with our revenues. And one of the things we've done to hopefully try to help that process is we put in a couple of new voluntary exit programs. So we have our voluntary exit initiative program for those that aren't ready to retire, but really maybe they just are feeling like it's time to try something different.
Right.
And then those that are closer to retirement and thinking about it, we put in a voluntary retirement incentive plan to support them in their decision-making on retirement. So workforce reductions can come from voluntary and non-voluntary sources.
So with the staff component of it, you have different levels of... You have full-time faculty, part-time, and then there was another acronym, and I can't remember it for the life of me, but people that do like one course or something. Yeah. You have administration, you have support staff. In your reduction to the number where you say this is the sustainable number, mm-hmm. are you seeing it fairly consistent across each sector? And if there's another part of staff that I'm missing, please tell me. Is it kind of roughly 20% in each of those areas, or are you seeing higher in admin or lower in admin or lower in support staff?
So what we need to do when this process completes, and the process doesn't complete until we get to that sustainability moment.
And
right?
That was 28?
28.
Okay.
Is we have to actually structure a college workforce that aligns with the vision that we have of what it is. So if there's 65 to 70 programs, what do I need to support that? If it's 23 to 2,500 students, what do I need to support that? How many people do I need to support the work on 70 grants that we get every year,
right.
60 grants that we get every year, right? So what are the things that we need to do within the context of how much revenue we're bringing in the door to create an organizational structure that supports that? So, you know, we anticipated that would be somewhere around 20% last January when we started the process. But the focus really is on how do we restructure around the new vision of who we will be in 2028.
So, and that's another, perhaps do a few, one more question. Okay. So give me a question and a half if I can, and I'll try and wrap it up. So one program, nursing, could have seven staff, where a media program might have one staff. So I know it's going to be specific to the programs that you have, how many staff you have. Tell me about what this community demands as far as jobs, because you broke it down, I think, 40% in a certain sector, 25,
yeah.
20, and 15. The programs that we're going to have are going to be about serving this market?
Yeah, so we continue to focus on, if we can deliver them cost effectively, so there's always a caveat to this. Like, there are some programs with the current funding models, it's just we can't deliver them in a positive way. But our focus as a community college is to focus in on our community and the workforce demands of our community. And that's why you saw us launch some new healthcare or mental health related programs recently. We've been getting some significant, feedback from people like from the hospitals and from Lisa Alley at Center for Mental Health and Addiction that we don't have that workforce here. So we need you to help us build that workforce. Because one of the things we've realized and learned over the years is that people don't move to Belleville for their first job. So if we don't train them here mm-hmm. and produce them here, then those people aren't going to be here to support the economic growth and the needs of our workforce. So things like MRT that we recently launched came because our region says we can't get these people. The people that come here and do their placements are coming from institutions from across the province. As soon as they finish their placement, they leave. But we know because of what you did with nursing that if we can keep the nurses here to graduate, they stay.
If you build it, they will come.
And the part is they will stay. That's the biggest piece. It's they will stay. And so that's the critical aspect. So we are doing that, and we're working with, we know we've got a large manufacturing sector. So we want to work with it, and we've been talking to them a lot lately about how do we create that workforce that you need and make sure it's tuned specifically to what you need. The trades programs, we've heard forever that we needed trades programs and apprenticeships development here because we didn't want to send our future apprentices to another city that they may never return from. So that's why we just launched Millwright, and we've got two more electrical apprenticeships coming online. So we worked really hard to get approval from the Ministry of Labor to get those things done. Our primary focus is on developing the labor market for here. Now, there are certain programs where we may need just a smaller number of those people. So for us to do that, we have to make sure, is there a demand that some of them that graduate may leave town, but we still have enough that are here. Mm-hmm. All of that goes into the discussions when we talk about programs and how we lay them out.
I wanted to ask you about loans, capital, pieces of property, the skills development fund, and about 250 other things. So what I'm going to ask you is, can we talk again in 3 months and check in to see where we are
sure.
and see what we can do from there?
Yeah, no, not a problem.
That's we'll the sure best use of my last question.
We'll make sure that we have time to do that.
I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Mark.
No problem.